My guest at this time is Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. Governor Bevin made headlines in recent weeks after the Trump administration gave the Commonwealth of Kentucky the green light to implement work requirements for Medicaid recipients. Conservatives largely hailed the move to reduce the size of government, while liberal critics suggest the move will end up killing people. So for the next few minutes, we'll get the story straight from the governor. And, sir, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to do so.
Well, the previous governor of Kentucky championed Medicaid expansion in Kentucky, and obviously the benefits for the states are better early on in that relationship than they are in the outgoing years. So what fiscal realities in Kentucky made you examine the option of work requirements, or were there other factors involved as well?
There are many factors, the fiscal being just one of them. The reality is this: the whole purpose of having health coverage is to ultimately allow people to have better health outcomes. What we have seen is through the expansion of Medicaid, we actually have fewer doctors, not more, that will even see Medicaid patients, which means that we've made access to health care less possible, even though more people are covered. So coverage itself does not lead to healthier outcomes. It doesn't lead to a healthier population. That, more than anything else, has been the driving catalyst. We want people to be healthy. How can we do it? And one of the ways you do it is by getting people engaged in their own health outcome. If people have a vested interest in something because they have actively participated in it, then they're more likely to value it and utilize it. The analogy I've often given is for people who've ever bought their own bicycle, the odds are pretty high that they didn't leave that bicycle out in the rain. In other words, if you care about something, you're going to pay better attention to it. So while we want people to be better engaged and have better health outcomes, we know simultaneously that healthier people cost less money for the healthcare system. As people are healthier, as people make more money, as people need less dependence on the government programs, that will also result in financial savings. But the savings will come only after we get a healthier population. So there are many parts to the decision. I'm a person who grew up in poverty, well below the poverty level, never had access to health care coverage my entire life. The first time I had it was I was 20-something years old. I was an active duty Army officer before I ever had access to health care. So I know from personal experience the impact of what it's like not to be able to access the system. And I also know that the value of something is appreciated by those who have some participation. And we owe people the dignity and the opportunity to be able to pursue the American dream. Our 1115 waiver is intended for exactly that purpose, to help people get on the on-ramps that lead to the American dream.
All right. That's a good summation of your position there. Let me ask a few follow-ups now. First of all, expand a little bit on right now what it's like for a Medicaid recipient to try and get access. You mentioned that's been very difficult, despite the fact that more people have coverage now. What are the wait times compared to people who have health coverage by other means?
It's interesting. Studies that have been done have shown that people with Medicaid access in some instances have lesser health outcomes, at best equivalent health outcomes, to people with no coverage at all. That's a pretty sobering fact. Kentucky leads the nation in many health categories that we would not want to. Diabetes, lung cancer, premature deaths, hypertension, cardiac arrest and cardiovascular disease. These are things that we don't want to lead the nation on, and these numbers have only gone up since we've expanded Medicaid. This tells us something isn't working. So people, whether they have access or not, are not utilizing it. Our number of people using the emergency room as a first stop for primary care since we've expanded Medicaid has actually gone up proportionally, as well as in absolute numbers. Again, not the assumed response. The key is this. This doesn't apply to anybody who's a traditional Medicaid patient. The elderly, the frail, someone who's pregnant, a child, someone who has a disability, who is an addicted, addicted to drugs. These are people for whom there is not an expectation. These are people for whom Medicaid was originally designed. What it wasn't designed for is working-aged, able-bodied men and women, people with no dependents, people who could get engaged, but for some reason have not. That's not who the system was designed for. So this waiver, this expectation that people work or volunteer or get training or education, only applies to a subset, a small subset of the expanded Medicaid population. It doesn't apply to everybody, so it won't affect those that are already qualified for Medicaid under traditional qualifications.
What are the work requirements?
20 hours a week will be required starting July 1st and phasing it in over five steps through November of 2018 in Kentucky. We're going to do different stages of the state, but over those 6 months, the requirements will be for each person who qualifies 20 hours a week of work, or 20 hours a week of volunteering, or 20 hours a week of education, or of training, or of some combination of all the above. And the argument I often hear, including from liberals who you alluded to at the outset, is they say that this is dangerous, that it doesn't apply, that so many of these people are already working. And I hear that. 60% of these recipients are already working. Perfect. They don't even need to worry about this. It won't apply to them because they're already meeting the very modest requirements. It's for those that are not but would like to be, those that are not engaged but would like to be, that we're going to provide the on-ramps for them to do so.
What is your example for this? This certainly rings back to the mid-90s and the federal efforts to reform welfare. I'm sure you've looked at a number of different programs that you've either been a part of or seen around the country. How did you envision what you have in mind here?
I mean, for me, two things have informed it. Yes, I think states need to lead as it relates to how do we actually engage people at the grassroots level. In Wisconsin, and entitlement reform as it related to welfare led the way for America back in the mid-90s. This is a similar opportunity, but what truly informed me is what I mentioned earlier. This is a world that I know very personally, and I think it's offensive to assume that people who are poor, like I was, can't do for themselves and that need to be kept in a box and fed crumbs forever as opposed to being given a chance to climb out of the box. This is a program that will allow people to get engaged in their communities and in their own health outcomes and prepare them for the commercial marketplace. Seema Verma, who is the head of the administrator of CMS that oversees these programs at the federal level, said that to do other than this is to treat those who are poor with the soft bigotry of low expectations. That is perfectly said, and I find it offensive that liberals think that poor people can't do things for themselves and need to be wards of the state. That's offensive. I find that kind of bigotry to be reprehensible. And in Kentucky, we're not going to tolerate it. We're going to give people a better opportunity.
You mentioned that 60% of Medicaid recipients in Kentucky already meet the work requirements. So for the other 40%, what are your expectations and goals, either 5 or 10 years from now? What do you hope it to look like?
It's interesting. It's 60% of the expanded Medicaid population. The traditional Medicaid population, of course, is not able to work. But for the expanded folks, that's probably a fair statistic. And so 5 years down the road, what do we imagine it would look like? As we've done projections, and again, they are only that, we would expect that 5 years from now, there might be as few as many as 95,000 current recipients who no longer are needing Medicaid for one of two reasons. A, they have moved their way up and out, and that should be the bulk of them. Or B, they just don't want to do anything at all in exchange for something of value. They could. There's nothing that precludes them. But they voluntarily say, I'd rather not. Maybe I have a spouse or someone else in my family. I'll use their health coverage. Whatever their reasons are, we can't force people to be on Medicaid. So we would estimate that over time, largely through people moving up and out of the poverty levels that would qualify them, we would have as many as 95,000 people who no longer need Medicaid because they're no longer qualified because they're making too much money.
Governor, just a couple of minutes left in our conversation here. Is this the first, maybe it's not the first, but is this a precursor to other types of programs like this that you expect to pursue?
Again, I'm a big believer in spending the money that we have and not more, being good stewards of the taxpayers' money because it is our own money. I believe in cutting regulation, simplifying the process, but above all else, as it relates to health care and any other policy that comes from government, we have to look at what is the return we get for our investment. And simply providing coverage is of no value if it doesn't result in better health outcomes in this instance. So as it relates to this issue and everything else, my approach to governing is to get a good return for the taxpayers on their money and to get results. Because at the end of the day, that's what we should be paying for, is results.
Last question, sir, on a different topic, but it's interesting that here in Washington, we had a big budget fight with the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, from your state, calling it the responsible path forward. Quite a bit of new additional spending in the next couple of years here. Rand Paul led the filibuster, calling it irresponsible and hypocritical for Republicans to back that. I'm sure you're close to both of them, but what do you make of your senators on such polar opposites of the issue the last few days?
I do know both gentlemen well, have a good working relationship with both of them, and I would simply say that in this instance, I agree entirely with Senator Paul. I don't agree with him on everything, but I do on this issue. We have a huge debt problem in America, $20 trillion in debt and climbing. This is absolutely irresponsible. And what we do every time we add to it is we stick it to the next generation. And people try to conflate the tax cut and say, well, people voted for a tax cut that will potentially mean $1.5 trillion less in revenue, and that's the same as adding debt. It's not even close to being the same thing. Not even close. Because think about this. If there's $2 trillion overseas at 35% corporate tax rate, it will never come home. You cut the tax rate to 21%, hundreds of billions of it will come home. You're not actually losing money. You're gaining money that never would have been repatriated. But to add debt straight up $300 to $500 billion, which is what we just did with this latest budget resolution, is irresponsible. It's kicking the can down the road. And our children and grandchildren are going to be suffocated by this debt if we don't start to be financially responsible. No individual, no family, no business could operate the way we're doing this at the federal level.
Governor, your time is precious. We appreciate you spending some of it with us. Thank you, sir, for your time today.
Thank you.
Kentucky Republican Governor Matt Bevin, I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.